What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We already got the petties are rolling in on the text page. People are feeling it today, man. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
It's good.
Yes.
Let's get petty.
Let's get petty.
I think Rex Ryan did us a favor by really, as a city, as a football team, everything else, just brought it all down to like us against them.
Yes.
It feels like it's time to circle the wagons against the Rex Ryan and all his foot soldiers.
Well done.
Thank you.
Here was D'Amico Ryans addressing his team after the win over the Chargers in the locker room.
Hey, man. Outstanding job by everybody. How was that bye week?
So D'Amico heard it. Pettiness, we love that, man. Like Rex Ryan saying that the Chargers had a bye week. I love that the team internalized it. Let's get to Joe Mixon. We'll skip to Joe Mixon here, Ben. We know this. Joe Mixon and the crew heard it. They were smoking cigars over it.
I thought that boy said a bye week. That boy said a bye week.
Bye week. What's going on?
Smoking on that Rex Ryan bye week cut. Come on, Rex.
I love that. I love
Yeah, that's, you know, and the way that all played out, too, was Joe Mixon first heard about it when a reporter asked him about it. And, yeah. You know, he hadn't heard that. And because that's the way it works. Like, they're going to, no matter how much you try to ignore the outside noise, at some point, a reporter's going to ask you a question about something some dude said, or somebody's going to text it to you, or whatever it is. And that's the appropriate amount of just finding something to get angry about, but that doesn't hopefully dominate 4 hours of your day scrolling through social media.
Yes.
You get nervous when players or teams start just being a little too rabbit-eared about what's going on in social media, because you're never going to win that war. And you're always going to – there ends up being too many chips on your shoulder.
Yep.
But just a well-placed barb from a – from a fat SOB like Rex Ryan.
I love that.
This is the petty cast, right?
Yes,
That feels good. That feels good.
Not that stopped you earlier in the week from calling him a fat SOB.
I was prepping for the petty cast.
There you go.
I didn't call him a fat SOB earlier in the week. I just said that he deserves credit for defying the odds and defeating his bariatric surgery.
The lap band.
He managed to become a plump individual again.
He is. That was a big victory for him.
Which I would never make fun of unless he was a bastard, which
right.
He is. So there you go.
You know who was really mad at the Chargers, feeling very petty? Dave Portnoy, founder of Barstool Sports.
Yeah.
He had money on Justin Herbert. He is, I know, Portnoy.
You give him a bad pizza review?
Poor guy. Here was Dave Portnoy after the Texans rolled up Justin Herbert and the Chargers.
Go back at anything I've said. I'm sure like Coach Gruden, oh, he's got all the tools, five-star arm, exquisite spiral. He sucks. I don't care what tools he has. You know who had tools? Jeff George. Sucked. You know who has tools? Jamarcus Russell. Sucked. What is the infatuation with this f***ing guy? He sucked at Oregon. Their team got worse. He was supposed to be number one draft pick. Fell because people watch him like, hey, this guy may f***ing suck. You know what sucks? Running f***ing when it's 6-0, okay? 6-0, you're dominating the game. You get turnover at the plus 40. You scramble 20 yards to your right, stop, throw 40 yards downfield across your body in double coverage, pick, let the Texans off the mat. Not that it mattered because you're throwing pick sixes every 5 seconds. He stinks. He stinks. You have to prove it. I don't care what tools they have. You can have a bunch of parts. If they don't fit, you got a dysfunctional robot. That's what he is. And yes, I bet a ton on the Chargers today. Shame on me. Because I also have the Texans to win the Super Bowl, which I started at the beginning. So I'm a loser-loser. Ha, ha, ha. Laugh at me for betting on Justin Herbert. He is soft. So what? He has good hair. He has bad skin. I do not like him.
Bad skin. The bad skin part is like where I'm like, oh, this goes in the petty cast.
For sure. That's right. Yeah, so he's got good bad hair, skin. Bad skin.
Bad skin.
Yeah, he's all, yeah, does he have,
I think he's got a little
acne?
Bit. I think a little bit, yeah. I think a little bit. Pretty sure.
He's getting beyond the age where you typically have acne issues, isn't he?
Like,
yeah.
He plays like he's that age, man. He plays
that
like
he's 17. Petty. That's really petty when he brought up the bad skin.
The skin. That's where I'm like, oh, yeah, this is going in right here.
Lumping him in with Jamarcus Russell was a low blow.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a bit much.
Overreaction.
Jeff George is a whole different dynamic, too, because Jeff George was just an a-hole, where,
yes.
Justin Herbert seems like a pleasant enough
Swell
young man.
Guy. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Jeff George, when he brought that up, I thought, like, well, hey, Jeff George had some good years. Nope. He had one good year.
Yeah.
When
the Vikings.
In 99, yeah, he was 8-2 with the Vikings.
Yep.
He led the league in passing in 97, but it was a year in which Oakland went 4-12.
Yeah.
So he had very, very few winning seasons, and when he did have winning seasons, they typically ended up being like not even a complete, like he was 6-4 in 92. Oh.
I don't know that anybody threw a prettier ball, though. Like his release
right.
was sick.
He was gifted.
He was very gifted. Yeah, he was gifted, but he was a jerk. All right, we mentioned this a little bit earlier. I can't remember if we mentioned it on the air or off the air, but I know we talked about the Steelers with Ross Tucker and just how they laid down for the Ravens, it seemed like. They had the Ravens had 250 yards rushing before they were even midway through the third quarter of that game. Boy, Kirk Herbstreit killed the Pittsburgh Steelers during the broadcast. That game was on Amazon, so it was an Al Michaels, Kirk Herbstreit joint. Here's Herbstreit just killing the Steelers.
If I were a Steelers fan, the thing that would concern me just watching this first half, you're in the postseason. You're getting dominated. I don't see any fight. I don't see any pushback. It's one thing to lose XOs against a really talented offense, but where the hell is the fight? Mm. This is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
There's nothing. They're just going through the motion.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a strong opinion from Herbstreit on an NFL game right there.
I think the bigger, I guess, maybe I'm way too sympathetic to the challenges of facing this Ravens offense. Because there's definitely room for better energy, better viciousness by the Steelers defense.
Yeah.
But there's an element to playing that Ravens offense because the misdirection and the effectiveness of their offense, it puts defensive players into so many binds that it just takes the fight out of you.
You
know,
drains
the old saying
you.
Is if you're thinking, you're done. You know, you don't want to think too much as a defensive player. You want to just think the minimal amount,
yep.
minimal effective dose of thinking. And they make you think a lot, and that does tend to take away, just like many astrophysicists and other smart people, not the most violent of bunches. A lot of time thinking, that's why it'd be like if you were fighting. Like if I had to go into a boxing match with a middleweight boxer, you know, that like is an actual boxer, and I'm just me, and I'm not allowed to grab him. It's not MMA. I can't turn it into my grappling skills are useless.
Yeah.
And somebody's like, punch him.
Right.
Like I'm trying to punch him. I can't. Punch. Why aren't you punching him?
That's a great
analogy. Because I can't punch him.
Yeah.
So I'm just covering up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So Herbstreit on the Steelers. Now, here's another Steelers one. This is a petty cast. If you're just tuning in, and we got some good petties on the text page we're about to read. George Pickens, this is a hilarious exchange on whether or not he's optimistic about the future with the Steelers.
Yeah, I seen signs of growth for sure. From past, you know, the first year I've been here. Just way more growth for sure.
Does that make you optimistic going forward?
Nah.
Oh, yeah, I've seen a lot of growth, man, since I got here. We've grown a lot as a team. So does that make you optimistic for the future? Nah. My first
with
thought,
his future for his future.
If it was almost any other player,
yeah.
I would have thought to myself, did he mishear what word it was?
Or did he maybe mean, like, are you reading into that or whatever?
Yeah, or does he not know what optimism is? You know, like
what is
that?
It with the Steelers and receivers? It's like they are a disgruntled receiver factory.
It's really weird because they're really good at finding skilled receivers. Like, they're really good at scouting the skill set.
They're really good at getting the most out of second round and later receivers,
Antonio
too.
Brown
like
was
Antonio
a,
Brown.
Yeah,
Antonio Brown. Hines Ward. Like, all these various guys. They don't need to spend a first round pick on
Mike
a receiver.
Mike Wallace, you know, Chase Claypool when he was a Steeler before he went off the reservation as a Bear wherever they traded him to. You know, like, it's, yeah, it's crazy, man. It's, so George Pickens, not optimistic about the future. Speaking of Steeler receivers, Antonio Brown tweeted out a picture after the Steelers lost to the Ravens.
Yeah.
Where it's one of those things where it takes like four pictures to morph a face into somebody else's face. And it took four pictures for him to kind of, the software morphing Mike Tomlin's face into Doc Rivers' face. The implication being like, yeah, Doc Rivers, playoff failure. Playoff failure, who's won a championship back
right
in the same year that Tomlin won his only championship back then.
I was, when I first clicked on this, Sean, when you sent the link, I was disappointed because I had read Philip Rivers, and I was trying to, I was excited to figure out, like, what's the correlation there? I guess playoff success or lack there, I don't know. But okay, I'll take Doc Rivers.
Doc Rivers, yeah, that's a good one. I mean, that's a deep analogy because they both won their championships, I want to say, in 2008. And so that's a good job by whoever's running Antonio Brown's X account.
It's closer than I thought it would be.
It didn't take long, man.
If I'm looking, Doc Rivers has if this is his current hairline, that's a really impressive hairline for a man his age.
Yeah, I don't know.
Good job, Doc Rivers.
Is his face, have it open. I like to see, sometimes Doc Rivers likes to see how shiny his face is. He's got one of those faces, he sweats a lot, you know, like he's, good shine right there, I would say, on his face.
He still does. That's his legitimate hair. I'm looking at a current picture of him from a press conference.
Yep.
His hair's still good. Yeah.
Bucks coach right now. He's been all over, man. Doc's been all over the place. All right, this is me getting petty right here. Here's Tom Pelissero talking about the Chicago Bears, who have a head coaching vacancy to fill, talking about looking at my head coach.
I am told the team wants to interview Notre Dame's Marcus Freeman for the job. Freeman is in the midst of a magical run with the Fighting Irish to the national championship game. Obviously, unlikely that he would entertain NFL overtures prior to that game a week from tomorrow against Ohio State. But the Bears have done extensive research for months on Marcus Freeman. He's only 39 years old. Would not be a shock if at some point he at least considers going to the NFL.
Oh, boy. I don't know what to tell you, Sean. I don't. What are you going to get petty about here? You're not going to get petty about Marcus Freeman.
Petty that they're even, that the Bears are even putting their greasy mitts. Stay away from my coach.
Yeah.
He doesn't want your janky ass team, all right?
He has never coached in the NFL, right? I mean, he was.
I don't think he's even been an assistant in the NFL.
Yeah. No, I mean, he got banged up. I mean, he was on the Texans, either the practice squad or the regular roster in 2009.
Briefly.
His rookie year. And then he had some injury and played again.
He got cut by the Texans. He eventually wound up with the Colts. Yeah. And the Colts, in their physical with him, found an enlarged heart valve.
And said,
hey, no team is going to clear you to play after they find out you have an enlarged heart valve. And so I saw an interview with him recently where he talked about that. He was talked about how, like, this is God, because he had been toying with the idea of getting into coaching. He was ready to go coach at Ohio State, like, as a grad assistant. And then the Colts called him and said, hey, we want to bring you on the team. And whoever the head coach, I think it was Tressel at the time, said, hey, man, play for as long as you can. You know, like, that's where the, you know, go make your money. And he went to that Colts physical and they found an enlarged heart valve and they said, no one's going to clear you to play. And he was very reticent about it. He said, okay, well, this is God telling me it's time to go coach. And he went and coached, and now here he is.
So for one, he's got very limited NFL experience, just as a kind of knock-around player who's on a few different teams for 1 year. I'd be surprised if he wanted to make that leap. I do, too. He's making $9 million a year.
Yeah.
I think in this age of transfer portal and everything, and NIL, I feel like Notre Dame is positioned really
well.
They
figured it out, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think there's some of the schools that either academically or because of tradition or what have you, but especially maybe on the academic side of things, I think they've got an advantage in retaining some players because there's just there's an appeal to having that degree and going to that school and everything. You got alumni like Sean T. Pendergast.
Oh, yeah.
Who are out there just always
scratching
available
out
to
checks. Yeah.
Yeah. How much have you donated to the collective?
A lot. I'm not going to say how much. I don't want to say how much, tax purposes and everything. I don't want to give it up. But yeah, yeah.
I don't think he's going. Sorry, what are we being petty over the fact that that he's lame, that he's got this?
No, I'm petty about the Bears. I'm petty about the Bears even just sniffing around my head coach.
Well, now I feel bad. I was trying to get into it, and I was making fun of his medical condition. Thanks a lot,
Coach. That sailed right over my head.
He's weak. He's damaged goods, you hear? A real man would have put a pig valve in there and gone off and tried to play football. That's what we did back in the day. Rub a little dirt on that heart valve and get back in the game, kid.
Pig valve.
Yeah.
Who's more qualified to coach in the NFL, Marcus Freeman or Deion Sanders?
Deion. Just on the surface of it all, by resume, I guess, because of his extreme experience in the NFL.
Notre Dame's not an easy place to do this thing, you know? Like, that's...
You're right, right. Yeah, no, I'm basing it purely on college versus NFL.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's been easy. I'm not trying to diminish what done there, Sean.
Yeah, I'm just making a counterpoint.
I'm not being petty in all directions.
Yeah,
all right?
Yeah.
I've already lambasted him for his... The pathetic heart condition. Yeah. Now you're asking me to act like, oh, no, not impressive at all what he's done with his football team.
That's true. I should have waited. The text message. Okay, this is a good one. There's a little bit of unnecessary pettiness, but I'm happy the Vikings got bounced in the first round so that Grenard and the 10 other Texans they have signed don't make it further than us in the postseason.
That's a good point. Yeah, because a couple of them, just like it happened in the Texans game, both Grenard and what's-his-face there showed up last night.
Blake Cashman.
Yeah.
And Kamu Grugier-Hill almost blocked a punt. I'm like, God, this won't end.
Remember, Kamu showed up in the Texans game, too.
The pick. He had a pick in the first quarter.
Grenard and Kamu. That's what I was thinking of. Grenard and Kamu showed up big.
Yeah.
Cashman. And I think Cashman had a good game.
Cashman would have had a touchdown if they didn't overturn that fumble call on Matthew Stafford. Yeah. Cashman's been, they've all been really good. Those have been good signings by the Vikings. They've all played at or above the level I think the Vikings expected from them.
What a letdown for that team. Just talking about being petty. My God, Vikings. How do you start off as the wonder boys of the NFL? The feel good. Wow, you got Sam Darnold. You got this, that. You win 14 freaking games, but in the last two, you've just been a non-factor.
Yeah.
You just showed up and got your butts whooped.
You look like the Jets with Sam Darnold at quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, like you got destroyed.
It makes me, you know what, I'm petty about the fact that the Texans lost to that pathetic band of imposters is what they were. Imposters.
Imposters. Text message. Those Wookiees that they don't know anything.
They don't know anything.
Signed Will O'Wyan.
It's true. Chewbacca was always trying to like contribute to the game plan and everything.
Yeah.
Just shut up with your suggestions,
right,
Chewbacca.
Question gets asked at the press conference for D'Amico yesterday that only Payne and Pendergast can answer. D'Amico himself couldn't even answer it. Only Sean and Seth can answer this question. We will have that for you coming up.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Will Kunkel at Fox 26. I like Will. Will does a good job.
I think it's pronounced Kunkel.
If you're fancy, you pronounce it Kunkel.
Ever since I realized that Bullock was supposed to be pronounced Bullock for Kalen Bullock, I've really been emphasizing the second part of people's names.
Is that how it's supposed to be pronounced? Okay.
Yeah, he clarified it a couple weeks ago. You and I missed it.
Yeah.
But I noticed it on the broadcast because they were saying in the Titans game, the play-by-play was really emphasizing the Bullock.
Yeah.
And it is in the pronunciation guide. It's Bullock.
Bullock. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's.
Oh, yeah. Bullock is even better.
Bullock. So Will Kunkel of Fox 26 asked D'Amico Ryans yesterday who epitomizes the swarm mentality. He was looking for names. He wanted names. I was a little surprised D'Amico actually gave some names in this answer here, but here's D'Amico Ryans answering who epitomizes swarm the most.
Who leads the swarm charge? That would be, well, you really can't go out there if you're not about it. Like, and that's what's unique about our defense. Like, it's not one guy. If you want to talk about one guy, you can talk about Will as the guy who leads it. You talk about Aziz as the one guy. You can talk about Stingley. I can name all those guys because each one of our guys, when you play defense, the way I believe in playing defense, like if you're not about the swarm mentality, then it's going to be hard for you to play defense for me because I see it one way.
All right. I like that he named one at each level. That was good spacing out. Who's the name that pops into your head if you had to answer that question?
If I had to answer it, it would be, it's tough because there's parts of Will Anderson that I think just leap out immediately. But I feel like for this total sum total of all that is swarm, that indefinable swarm, Aziz Alshire.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think there's a reason why they handpicked him to come in here and be the middle linebacker for this team.
Yeah.
You know, the history that D'Amico, they knew what they were getting with Aziz Alshire. D'Amico had long history with him, you know, and it's, other than the injury and the suspension, it's worked out fabulously, I think. Would you agree? Like, that's been a good, like, when he's been on the field, that's been a good signing for this team.
Yeah, no, that's, and I think he's done everything that you brought him in for, not just as a player, but for his leadership. Because it's like, you know, there's, leadership's a dicey thing. Sometimes guys are good leaders in one scenario, but in a different environment, it's not quite the same fit. I think with Aziz, the on-field leadership, just in terms of the X's and O's, getting guys lined up properly, keeping guys with the right keys and everything, that shows up.
Yeah.
And I think versus the Ravens specifically, if the Texans face the Ravens again, I'm not claiming that it's like the Aziz Alshire is going to be the difference that, you know, turns it into a competitive game or anything, but I don't think it'll be as bad as we saw the first time around because the Ravens just do a lot of things that challenge you mentally, and Aziz can keep things kind of on the same page. But then with the off-field stuff or the locker room leadership, so many guys this week after this game cited Aziz as just in various different facets and aspects. You know, Will Anderson on your show in the postgame, you and Clint, he said that you know, Aziz is the guy that said, like, we want to be the kind of team that can take a punch and then keep coming. And that's exactly what happened in that game. They took a punch on that first drive, and it got down to 3rd-and-2 for what looked like, given the way that first drive went with the Chargers, it looked like they were just going to march into the end zone.
I agree.
They yeah. came up, stopped them, and then they kept it. And then they the next series, or like 3 seconds later, they had to deal with a short field, and they held them to a field goal. And then it was eventually off to the races once the offense joined the party. Yeah, Azeez Alshire for sure.
He is for me too. Now, the reason I said that really only Payne and Pendergast can answer this question empirically, you know, who epitomizes, who leads the swarm charge to...
We've got the data.
To reiterate it to
We've
me.
We've got the stats.
We got the analytics here, yes, for this. As many of you know, we started in week three of this season. It was Seth's idea to do a circle of swarm, similar to the Astros' circle of trust, but more exclusive. Just as subjective, but more exclusive, to where Seth and I each pick three to put in the circle of swarm each week. And it's based totally on our own criteria for it. And the criteria can be a moving target sometimes. But I look at the scoreboard here. I've been keeping track of who's made it the most weeks. And it actually does kind of map out with, like, the guys you would pick as the swarm. Like, not only the swarm, but, like, the best guys on the team, too.
I think we've done a good job. Yeah,
I think we have,
too. I think we've actually, it's like at the end of the year, hey, you had a few strikeouts, like that time that you didn't put Derek Barnett in it.
Yeah, that was bad.
After he had a scoop and score.
Yeah.
But aside
was bad.
From that, it's like, you know, in a baseball season, you know, you have some rough stretches, you got a few slumps here and there, but you look up at the end of the year and you're batting .400. I feel like we've done that.
So here's what the scoreboard looks like. For the Circle of Swarm. The Circle of Swarm tally looks like this. Danielle Hunter is the leader right now. He's been in 11 times.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely matches the eye test, I would say.
Well, and I would say of all these guys that we're going to read, he's the guy who's the least, I guess, violent of all of them. You know, like
personality-wise?
Well, no, just or in terms of his play, too. You know, he's more of a technician and everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's not as much of a blunt force trauma type of guy. But he's such a professional, and he's so damn consistent that it's impossible to keep him out usually, because he's it's very rare that he's not having an effect on the game.
I totally agree with what you said. I'm just picturing Drake May listening to our show right now. Like, what the hell are you talking about? He's not blunt force. We got Drake May pretty good, but you're right about that. 11 for Danielle Hunter. Next closest.
Well, even the Drake May one, though, he spider leaped, he flying squirreled onto him.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a hard collision.
That's true.
You know, it was a safe collision. It was in no danger of being flagged.
Yeah, I guess he knocked the ball out, so maybe it looks more violent when the ball comes out. Next closest with 9. So Daniil's been in 11 times. Next closest with 9, Azeez Alshire, and the aforementioned by D'Amico Ryans, Derek Stingley Jr.
Yeah.
So I think Azeez is the right answer to the question I asked you. Like, who would you have answered that question with? He missed 3 games with suspension and 3 games with injury. Like, I think I feel safe saying I think he would have been in this thing for at least half of those games, you know.
Well, to be in it 9 times and miss 6 games.
That's crazy.
That's a pretty good ratio.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we put him in once while he was I think the week he got suspended, we still put him in the circle of
You form. Put him in the week he was coming back.
Oh, okay.
The week he was coming back.
You should have put him in the week he was suspended, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Just as another...
We may have.
I think we did, because we wanted to show him support since the team wasn't allowed to him.
That's right. 8 times, Nico Collins. So he's the most of any offensive player, which I think and Mixon has 7. Like, so I think that matches. Like, the offense shouldn't have guys that are ahead of the defense, the top guys, but the top 2 guys are right there in the mix, Nico and Mixon, right there.
So I feel good about that. That's the top 5.
Yep.
So then we've got a little bit of a tiebreaker scenario here for the regular season Circle of Swarm.
Yeah. 6 times in the Circle of Swarm, Will Anderson Jr. and CJ Stroud.
Okay.
So the 2 future faces of the franchise are tied at 6th.
Yeah, and I'll just say, you know, and with everything we've said about CJ, there's obviously the circumstances created a lot of issues, and, you know, CJ didn't have the same type of performance he did last year, whereas Will Anderson was one of the better defensive ends in the league this year. So, Will Anderson. Plus, it's hard for a quarterback to be swarmy.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're, I don't know, like Tim Tebow might have made the circle of swarm a lot back in his day, but that's not who you want.
Or Cam Newton.
Yeah, well, I would take Cam Newton. But Cam Newton would be in the circle of swarm.
Yeah. And then you start to get down to, I'm not going to go through all these, but next one with 4 times. It's interesting that it's all 3 secondary guys, Petrie, Lassiter, and Bullock. All 3 of the primary secondary guys, not named Stingley, are tied there. and you start to. The interesting ones are the guys who made it one time. I can practically name the game. Like, Dare made it one time. That had to be the Jacksonville game where he scored the winning touchdown. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Tank Dell made it one time. I can tell you that was the, I think it was the New England game where he had 120 yards receiving in that game, you know? DeNico Autry made it in. He had two sacks in the Jets game. Guarantee you that's when he made it in. All
you know what?
Stuff.
It's a testament to the tough season that Tank Dell was having that he was only in the circle of Swarm once just because he's a guy by nature of being as feisty as he is, but as a small guy.
I'm
always looking to put Tank Dell in the circle of Swarm, and there just really weren't a lot of opportunities this year. Should have put him in the week that he did we put him in the week that he
got blasted in the knee.
You know what?
We probably should have.
He held on to the ball.
Yes, yes.
Oh,
yeah.
We weren't in the mood. I think it was a very. That we probably phoned it in that week because it was just such a disappointing game.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people reach out to me this week, Seth, on texting and social and say, man, y'all are going to have a hard time doing one this week.
It is. It's going to be really tough.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, Foley Fatakasi had some big plays there. A lot of guys who aren't usually in the conversation. Eric Murray. This will be a tough one.
Really tough one. I mean, hell, D'Angelo Ross blocked a punt and returned a block kick for a 2-point score.
For anybody asking, no, we will not turn the circle of swarm into a gutter whore by allowing more people into the circle
it's
of
six.
Swarm. It's six.
That's it.
It's a hard number.
It's six.
So it's got very defined boundaries. You cannot expand them.
Nope.
Okay?
Nope. Text message. I was wondering if I get paid for helping out with the pregame show on Saturday. Seth was talking to people, wasn't paying attention, and was almost late after a commercial break. I tapped him on the shoulder and told him, hey, you got to go up on the stage. Is there HR paperwork to fill out?
I remember that guy. No, you get an attaboy. That's what you get. Attaboy, thank you.
You were a big man of the people. You've been a big man of the people the last few games.
Well, this one, it was nice. The temperature was nice.
It's beautiful. Yeah, that's true.
It's hard when we're out there and it's 98 degrees. I have a hard time getting out in the sun for 5 minutes and then going back up to the stage and everything. Sean, we had a stretch this season where I passed out I passed out three times in one night.
Yeah.
But then I also had a head injury the week before.
Yeah, that's right.
I had to take care of my body. Yeah. So when I'm out in the heat, I got to just be careful about how much I'm messing around.
That was the heat's been crazy. That was the first cool weather game I think we've had all year. Like, even Christmas Day, it was 82 degrees out there.
And I told you that I would be more active talking to people during the breaks, and you were still surprised. I was getting after it, man. It was like I was running for mayor.
Respect. Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely.
Made a lot of promises, is what I'm saying, that I will not follow through
now
on.
Now this guy wants to get paid for getting your attention.
Well, I promised him I would. That's the problem. You see, that's a whole...
All right, Parker and Sarah. That's if you're getting an invoice for $250, that's who it's from. Let's circle over for a minute over to the Astros. Boy, it is awfully quiet on one front. And what is the grade so far for the Astros? Pitchers and catchers coming up in a few weeks, man. How are we feeling about the offseason? Do you agree with this grade for the Astros offseason so far? We'll have that for you coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you, Payne and Pendergast. We'll circle back to the Texans at the top of the hour. One big reason I'm very enthusiastic about this game on Saturday. We'll tell you what it is, top of the hour. Astros report card for the offseason so far. It'll be here before we know it. Things are very quiet on the Alex Bregman front. So some team out there is going to sign Bregman to a deal and their grade will presumably go up depending on what the deal looks like. I don't think that team is going to be the Astros. I think that ship has probably sailed. Although if he's willing to do a short-term deal, maybe they move a few guys around. Someone plays outfield that wasn't planning on playing outfield, maybe.
You got to think, man, I wonder how Bregman himself feels about it. If it does work out that way that, wow, the best offer he got was from the Astros and he could have just been here and been an Astro for, even if it wasn't for life, it would have been like, you know,
deep into his career.
Adamantly, right. He would have had a couple of scrounging years at the end.
Yeah.
After having won a couple of World Series, as being as respected as he is and everything, I'm torn because there's a part of you that wants to say, well, told you so, but I like Alex Bregman.
I like Bregman, sure, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and Bregman was one of the guys that was kind of... Bregman was one of the guys that was kind of like, you know what? It's us against the world. We don't care. We're gonna, and then we got to watch him mature from being a young guy who was like very much like a almost belligerent at times, mm-hmm. or defiant. But then he became a father, and he kind of grew into a more mature role. And it just sucks. It sucks for everybody. It sucks for him, and it sucks for us.
Does this feel like a B- offseason for the Astros to you? Because that's the grade they got from Jim Bowden on The Athletic.
Yeah, I thought that was a fair grade. Mm-hmm. I think that it's hard. It's hard. Obviously, there's compensation for Tucker, which that story will be told over time as to whether the compensation was right or not. But the fact of the matter is, you're losing a really one of the best baseball players in the league, and the loss of Bregman is going to hurt in a lot of. It's not just his actual performance, it's everything everybody says about him. The fact that Alex Bregman was part of turning Hunter Brown's season around,
yeah,
and perhaps salvaging his career just by telling him to pitch a sinker, you know, like that kind of stuff. That's one of the stories that's been made public, was that Bregman was talking to Hunter Brown about his struggles. He suggested he reintroduce his sinker, and then all of a sudden Hunter Brown is what he is now. Like, how many conversations like that over the course of the last several years has Alex Bregman had with players in the clubhouse or on the plane? It's just, it's hard to replace that.
I agree with the grade, and I will say this, that it is a B-. This is going to sound weird to say. I think is actually a check mark in favor of the job Dana Brown has done. Oftentimes, a B- is not a grade you would... That's settling for a grade, a B-, it feels, especially for a team that's been... the elite franchise in this sport for the better part of the last decade. But think about the equivalent for a lot of teams of losing Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman. Like losing your foundational Gold Glove third baseman, and to what you just said, Seth, losing literally one of the best players in baseball in the offseason. And those two things happened, or at least it looks like they're going to happen. I don't think Bregman's coming back. And I think they recovered from it nicely. Like, I think the combination of getting Paredes in the trade, and then you get Christian Walker on a quintessential Astro deal, which is 3 years, $60 million. I don't think this has the danger of being an Abreu signing, because Walker brings it with the bat, and he's a three-time Gold Glover, and he's younger, and he's not descending the way that Abreu appeared to be when he got here. I think it's a good signing.
Well, that's the part, too, where I think as an Astros fan, you might bump it up just because there's not going to be an extreme minus at first base.
Right.
Which, you can't – it's not glitzy or anything like that, but, man, it was rough that there's just been this black hole so many times in the lineup and in the field – at first base, that after we were spoiled by Yuli for so many years, it's really nice just to have some foundation there right now.
Yeah, I think the scary thing is the teams you're chasing in the American League, not in the West, because you're winning the West still, but the teams that you're chasing: Yankees, A; Red Sox, A-, Orioles, I think, got a B+. The Guardians got a B. Like, these are all teams that, at least according to Jim Bowden, at least had decent, better off seasons, and you did. We'll see how it plays out, though. I mean, the big thing is the Yankees getting an A. That sucks. How about totally shifting gears here? Does Jack Easterby have the PR wheel spinning right now to get back?
He did an interview in Sports Business Journal.
Okay,
which apparently is the first interview he's done with any kind of a publication since he left the Texans.
Yeah,
I didn't fact check that or not, but somebody said it, and I'll go with it.
Yeah,
somebody in another. So. He did that one interview with that little podcasting dude.
I think he was still with the. I think he was still with the Texans at that time.
Oh, was he at that time? So it was interesting. Nobody from the Texans organization would go on the record with this, and I guess multiple people kind of declined interviews, saying like, "Look, we're in a good place now. We don't want to kind of rehash old stuff. Yeah. We're just let's forget it and move on." That's how I was about it a little bit. It was interesting because with Easterby, there's always a little bit of a spin and self-promotion to everything he does or says. But as I've said all along, as much as I hated not Jack Easterby himself, but the presence of a Jack Easterby type figure in the organization, like, he did do some good things for the team. I think there were some, there's some changes that he made that were for the better. And then ultimately, even though he went about it in a very shady manner, he got the right GM in. I think
the right GM. Yeah.
If I had to choose between Jack Easterby's choice of Nick Caserio or Corn Ferry, then they made the right choice there.
Yeah, Corn Ferry, you know, the word on the street was Corn Ferry really liked Omar Khan, who's now the GM in Pittsburgh. You know, who's the, you think Casario's done a better job than the GM in Pittsburgh the last couple of years? I do. I, you know, I think Nick's done a really good job for the most part.
Yeah. So, and yeah, like, I'm happy with Nick. I mean, the way Nick has drafted defensive backs alone, it's been pretty damn good here with these young defensive backs. Now, the interior offensive line, we can have that conversation in the offseason.
The interesting part about this article, as you point out, nobody from the Texans spoke on the record. Bill Belichick, it looks like, did.
He did.
Bill Belichick,
He gave a very interesting quote because Jack Easterby lives in Charlotte now. You know, he's from that region.
Okay.
Lives in Charlotte. He's got some kind of a consulting firm or something, but he's still looking for opportunities in sports.
Sure.
This is the quote, and tell me what part sticks out to you. He emailed his response, Belichick did. So Belichick, who's at the University of North Carolina, within driving distance of Charlotte.
Yes, indeed.
He says, the scrutiny on Jack's career is unjustified and occurred because he was unknown publicly for a large part of his young career. That's not true. But whoever hires Jack next will get better. He just makes the entire organization, the people, and any systems he touches better.
Yeah.
Which is odd to me because Bill Belichick, I would think, is the head coach of a college football team making, how much is he making?
$10 million a year. Yeah, $10 million.
Feels like if it feels like he'd be in the market for a person that would make any system he touches better.
You would think.
And yet, he didn't hire Jack Easterby.
Yeah.
It's odd to me.
It's strange.
It's very strange to me.
You don't even need to pay moving and living expenses for him. He's right there.
This is the thing I think about Jack Easterby, was that the Texans were victim. They fell victim to the Peter principle, which is when somebody's really good in one role, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be awesome if you elevate them up to the next position.
Yes, yes.
I think Jack Easterby was really good as the character coach in New England, and also as frankly a mole. Like, when you can be the confidant to players who will tell you all of their deepest, darkest secrets, and then theoretically you go blab them to the boss.
Oh yeah,
that's a very valuable thing for a guy like Bill Belichick, theoretically. But I don't think that as a guy who oversees everything, and as a guy who in Houston, frankly, I think created a whole lot of distrust and paranoia in multiple departments because people were pitted against each other. No, I don't think he was good in that role.
You read the whole article. I have not yet. I've only seen the blurbs from the article. Does Jack Easterby in this article maybe overly take credit for what's going on here in Houston? Like you said, there's a few things he did that remain that were good. Does he take credit maybe to an extreme degree in this article, in your opinion?
He said, I can understand this sometimes when you're changing out workflows or reporting structures or how an organization may function to try to improve it. That can be hard on people. All right, I'm already turned
I'm
off.
I'm out, yeah.
All right, workflows. Mr. Wannabe corporate buzzword. He doesn't even use the corporate buzzwords, right? But that does not mean it's not worth it, right? It is worth it because what we saw is that an improved workflow in the building and an improved communication structure and an infusion of continued high character, smart, tough, and dependable people.
Oh, I'm out now. I'm way out now.
Increases the sustainability of the long-term vision. So, yes, he's taking credit for the long-term vision.
Oh, my God. Smart, tough, and dependable people. He's still running around with that in his back pocket, isn't he?
So, again, I'll give him credit for in some of the like sub-programs that they started and everything. I thought it was a shame with Easterby because I always felt like, man, he's got a lot of really good ideas, and it felt to me like, but because of his, he was classically one of these guys who didn't understand that when you manipulate people over and over again, at some point they catch on to you.
Yep.
And like, it's a lack of respect for the intelligence of others that ultimately that capsized them. Maybe in his next go round, he'll have learned those lessons. One of the quotes, from the article itself, the author says this: his biggest detractors, on the other hand, say he's an ingratiating climber whose best skill is managing up, impressing and getting close to the boss at the expense of his colleagues' trust.
Yeah.
Yes.
That sounds
accurate. Nail on the head.
Yeah, bingo.
Like, keep your eye on that guy.
Bingo.
Like, don't sleep with one eye sleep with one eye open around Jack Easterby.
Yeah, J.J. Watt, text message. J.J. Watt said a year ago he attributes the Texans' turnaround to them firing Easterby. There's a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people did, too.
You know who said nice things about him? David Culley. He did.
While Culley sitting on it, nice. while having a diamond crown on his head and sitting on a big pile of money holding a scepter.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. Payne and Pendergast.
Culley was eating the finest Werther's you can buy as he gave this interview.
There you go.
Sucking on a Werther's. They're like only you can only buy in France because he's got that wad of cash from Easterby.
Someone's saying, Jack Easterby with Silicon Valley buzzwords. Is this stuff nightmares are made of? Who allowed this? All right, let's get
the, sucking up to, I mean, that was something that people said from his previous days, though. Is like, he's the classic kind of guy that when you're talking to him, if somebody higher in status walks into the room, he's got like that one eye on that guy.
Oh,
and he's gonna cut your conversation off and make it over to the bigwig in the room.
I want an NFL team to hire him so badly. So badly, just to see how it plays out. Yeah. All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. One thing that looks troublesome that actually has me very excited for the game on Saturday with the Texans and the Chiefs. We will do that coming up next.